We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, everybody, and welcome in to now a post-draft edition of the OBR Film Breakdown. It's Jake, it's Andrew. We're going to talk through the Browns selections. It is always a little bit, I don't know, a little sad when the draft ends because there's a lot of buildup and then it's sort of over pretty quickly. I will say, though, as we sort of prepped this whole thing out, Andrew, it is a reminder to me that this goes a lot longer than I always think. Thursday, Friday, go until the midnight hour. But it is amazing to me how long Saturday's sort of session is from a genuine 12 to 7 p.m. And like the thought of making that an entire day, and I understand that times get reduced and you fit it all in one day, but it's just, I can't even imagine doing all of that in one day. So it's a long session. The Browns had those huge duration between selections that were tough to sit through at times and a lot of wondering if they were ultimately going to trade up, but they don't. And we come away with four new members of the Cleveland Browns. That's what we get. But I got to think, maybe I'm crazy in the thought process, Andrew, but it doesn't feel like this Saturday was longer than ones in the past. I just feel like it drug on forever.
I think it tends to be, yeah, like 6-7 o'clock when it ends. I remember last year, it's been two straight years that I've been moving on draft weekend. Yeah. I mean,
next year.
Well, yeah, you sign a year lease. It tends to happen that way. Right. So, try and stay here a few extra months, next year. But so I do remember last year, moving all day and then you guys were, cause you did that one live from Cleveland, you were all together, right? And there was like a real feeling of like, when is this thing going to end, as they were kind of trying to make those last few picks. I mean, that seventh round with 40 some picks is just really long. And you're absolutely right that they used to fit all seven rounds into one day, 7 hours. It was usually about 7 or 8 it ended back in the old days. So that tells you how many more commercials we're watching, right? And how much slower the whole thing's taking, because you're talking about 5 hours or 4 hours Thursday, 5 hours Friday. That's 9 plus another 7 today. So they've basically padded, you know, essentially 8 hours of commercials in there. It's taking, yeah, the draft is taking twice as long and they're picking the same number of players. So that really gives you an idea of how out of control the whole thing is. But to your first point, I agree with you. It does. It's like the feeling at the end of the day on Christmas you used to have when you were a kid, where it's like, well, now what? You know, there's a little bit of all the presents have been unwrapped and you kind of want to play with them, but you also were really enjoying the part where you got to unwrap stuff. And so it's like, there's not another Browns pick. When they, you know, when they picked their last selection, there was kind of a little bit of a feeling of like, that's it. That's where we kind of leave things. And then you just, now it's the long wait from late April all the way to early September.
I think, having reflected upon my initial point while you were talking, it gets me to like, the Browns haven't had this active a seventh round in a while. So I probably am thinking of years past where the Browns traded out of the seventh round and it just ended maybe an hour sooner. So Yeah, got there, deep reflection.
Yeah, 243 is a late pick.
It's such a late pick. And you're sitting those huge gaps to 156 and then the next huge gap all the way to 207. Listen, so I'm just saying, I started to have some hallucinations built into this whole thing, but we came out of it on the other end and we have four new players, like I said. Starts at 156 with Jamari Thrash. Don't think, again, I know a lot of people try to predict this stuff. There's a lot of joy that this brings to people to like pin down who the Browns are going to select. And this is not a name that I heard connected to Cleveland in the slightest. I think you had to know and pay attention to pretty thoroughly some of the people that commit to the draft as their full-time job to have a good feel for Thrash. I didn't see it coming, Andrew. Can't say I studied the prospect ahead of time. Where are you at on Thrash's selection here? Which is a great last name, got to say. Great last name. But I think, again, this is one that caught a lot of us by surprise and doesn't probably help some of the peripherals around Andrew Berry and the wide receivers stuff.
Yeah, I think, I mean, my take on this has been it does also feel like a player that's 23, you know, already, almost 23 and a half now. We'll be playing the majority of this or part of this season as a 24-year-old. He turns 24 in December. This, I think, if you stack this with Cedric Tillman, David Bell, Anthony Schwartz, it starts to feel like just guys that don't make a ton of sense. And there are parts of the Thrash profile that you understand. The ability to separate is what they talked about a lot in the post-pick press conference. That's what they liked about him. So you see that perspective. I think it's also an important context for everybody to know that he played half the season with a broken hand and fought through it, only missed one game. That matters when you're trying to assess his catching ability. That's something he was dinged for. But when you're playing half the year with a brace on your hand, that's very different in terms of how you catch the football. So I think that's necessary context. But I think my biggest issue is just the slight frame, not a big guy. I just need to see him. If he's not separating a lot, like leaving guys in the dust, if guys can get their hands on him, I just don't see how he's going to hold up because there's not much to him. And so that becomes my concern. And I think it's just very easy to kind of see him ending up in, you know, that being his fatal flaw and you kind of lump him in with the other ones. It's a fifth round pick. So obviously you're not expecting a ton, but Donovan Peoples-Jones was a sixth round pick. I felt like if you were going to roll the dice on a third day wide receiver, it would make sense to try and find one that at least had sort of prototypical size and speed and then work on the player long term that way. But they went a different way with a player who is pretty polished, older, and frankly, if he's going to play the season at almost 24, should be able to contribute this year.
Well, the guys he's going to be compared to at the kind of the range, if the Browns were wanting to move up or could have made a selection before, you're talking about the Browns immediately passed on 85 using that pick on Jalen McMillan, the Washington wide receiver who goes 92. You got to lump in Troy Franklin at 102, and you got to lump in two other players, 110 and 113, and Javon Baker, who goes to New England, and then Tez Walker, who goes to Baltimore, right? And the reason I say that is because if they were thinking wide receiver at a various point, like those are the guys they passed on to take Zinter, because you could have selected a guard a little bit later. There's always the idea of moving backward for a guard versus a receiver, I think, is self-explanatory in my opinion. So those are the guys directly compared. But as far as around his pick, at 142, Anthony Gold out of Oregon State goes to the Colts. 152, Anais Smith goes from Texas A&M to the Eagles. And then behind Thrash at 156, at 170, Bub Means goes to Pittsburgh, just an all-time name there. Tennessee Titans take Jaquan Jackson from Tulane. And then a name that a lot of people really liked, Malik Washington. I understand a little more rigid, stuck to the slot, but he goes to Miami at 184. And then PFF really liked Johnny Wilson, the big-bodied Florida State product that goes to the Eagles at 185. So, like, and also 191 is Tawan Palmer, who the Browns brought in for a visit, a UAB product. So, yeah, that's the connection. So let's start, like you said, Andrew, with the good. I mean, I think the way that we should frame this and start out is probably Steve Smith, who really likes him. You know, I mean, Steve Smith has some good takes, some bad takes. He likes him. He said exactly his quote here. He understands, and when he says he's talking about Thrash. He understands exactly where he is on the field. He knows exactly who he is, and if you draft him, you need to know who he is. He's an XY receiver. I mean, I think X is pretty universal in football playbooks, split in boundary type. That's what he's saying. I think Y is traditionally more of a slot, but again, playbook to playbook can vary a little bit. He said, not just a guy with speed, but also has routes. Usually with a guy who has speed, you say he only has three or four routes he can run. This guy, he can run every route in the route tree. Still a young kid, but he's exceptionally smart. I loved his pro day, and I love what I saw. He's definitely a chain mover and a deep threat on your offense once you draft this kid, right? So proclamations don't mean anything to the ultimate success. Steve Smith had a great NFL career, but if Steve Smith was really accurate with evaluating these guys, he'd probably be in a front office getting paid a significant amount of money. I like to cross-compare these things, Andrew, and talk a little bit about what Pro Football Focus and Dane Brugler had to say about him, because I think these are guys that have spent time really studying him. I'm not going to go through the strengths and weaknesses of every part of Thrash. We will have a deep dive where I've actually watched some film and then cross-compare some things that some of the evaluators said. Dane's overall statement here as a fifth, sixth round grade on Thrash said he doesn't have a true distinguishing trait as a receiver. Don't love to hear that, right? No thing that separates him. And again, this late in the draft makes some sense, but you would maybe like a thing that he could thrive in the NFL, right? He continues, but his separation quickness and receiving savvy will be his lifelines to an NFL career. His inexperience on special teams will need to change quickly once in an NFL camp. So, again, a little bit of a confliction in those reports, right? Pro Football Focus kind of says that their bottom line, Thrash is a good all-around athlete who has a knack for setting defenders up to create subtle separation near the sideline. His combine scores will be important for him to stand out in a stacked receiver class. You're talking about his relative athletic score, which is an under 7 athletic score because hurt by his size, which is 5'11", 188, the weight hurts. His 3-cone was not very good at 7.16, and then the vertical at 34 kind of hurt him as well. But the speed score at a 4.46 and a 1.52 10-yard split help a little bit. So kind of trying to paint the picture of who he is. He actually came from Georgia State, where he played 4 years for the Panthers, had a really strong 2022 season when he had 61 catches, 1,122 yards, 7 touchdowns, only 4 drops in that year. He was a first-team All-Sunbelt Conference player. I believe it's the Sunbelt that they're in. And he led them in receiving yards, led the conference in receiving yards, and then he had the school single-game receiving yards record, and then goes to Louisville where he was a second-team All-ACC player, led them in receiving. Obviously, some stuff tied around that. I think he ended up going 63 catches, 858 yards, 6 touchdowns. So, you know, I don't know, man. I have a hard time thinking he's, like, going to carve a path here. I mean, you're talking a fight to make the roster behind Moore, behind Cooper, behind Judy. And then you're talking about, is he a more valuable asset than Tillman? That's not the case. So you're talking about fifth and fighting with David Bell kind of thing, Andrew. That's probably the result we're looking at here. And whatever Mike Woods comes back to be after the season-long injury, that's kind of the battle.
Yeah, I think that sums it up. And I think that there's the way that I look at the Browns wide receiver room is Amari Cooper and then different size questions, right? I mean, I think we don't think that there's a big question about Jerry Jeudy, but I think there's some level of question about how he's going to look in this offense. And if he can really be a sort of more consistent threat, or if he is more of a complementary piece. I think there's a question about Elijah Moore, big questions about Cedric Tillman. And then you mentioned, you know, the rest of them. So I don't, you know, you're not going to find a guy that answers those questions in the fifth round. That's not what I'm asking, but it does just highlight that the Browns have a collection of players right now. They have Amari Cooper and then a collection of players for whom I think it's fair to say there are some reservations about what they're going to look like, how they are going to produce this season in a new offense. And you're going to have to wait to see it before you believe it, I think is just the truth of the matter. I want to go back to one thing you said, Jake, about the decision to draft Thrash here and pass on wide receivers at 85. If this is the type of player you want, I know that he's more obviously gotten more credit for route running and nuance to his game. Troy Franklin is not that player. Tez Walker is not that player. They are more run straight past you guys. but they're also both pretty slight guys who got dinged mostly for their size, and they bring a level of explosiveness that I think the Browns have kind of struggled to locate, honestly. I think they're expecting Jerry Jeudy to provide some of that, but I wouldn't have minded them taking a flyer on one of those guys and then, as you said, trying to find that guard at 156, because there are players, Christian Mahogany, Dylan McMahon, you can name a few players that went off the board after 156 that probably don't have the pedigree of Zach Center, but would put you in the same position. Given what we talked about last night about where they're at with the position of guard, I think it makes, I just, if I was running this, I just see that making more sense in terms of taking a high upside swing on a deep ball, go get it guy, which this offense could use, and then coming back for a guard that's a little bit more of a project rather than, I mean, listen, I think on a different team, if Zach Center goes to the Cardinals, right, or the Titans, he's probably battling and trying to start this year. He's going to sit. There's not a place for him to play unless there's an injury. And so I just don't, that part of it really puzzles me, because they obviously came back and wanted to add some sort of contributor at wide receiver. Given who was on the board at 85, that will stick with me for a little bit, that they didn't decide to go that direction there and then try and find a guard a little later.
Yeah, that's a bit of the pivotal what if of this draft. Not many, because the Browns sort of did something they don't normally do, sitting and sticking and picking, which just like, oh, they could have had this player or that player. But the decision around guard wide receiver at the moment they made it, considering some of those guys I just addressed before were selected after 85, which had some pedigree, does make you think that they make the right decision there. We are not trying to bury Thrash before it happens. He could come in and light the world on fire, and that would be great, right? That's the outcome that would be the best.
I would love to see it.
Nobody wants to do that, but I think you look at some of the stuff around his profile, you can see the simple cause for concern that is there. And again, we know that Andrew Berry has yet to really invest a significant draft asset at wide receiver, but if signs point to doing that next year, I have no clue what he will prefer. I'm going to be nervous about that if they make a first-round wide receiver selection next year, because, again, we haven't been able to pull the things that they like out of some of the selections they've made at wide receiver. It's a little bit puzzling. But, again, Jamari Thrash, we are hoping for the best, man. It would be great if you talk about, like, they're giving him a lot of, between Steve Smith and Pro Football Focus, talking about his ability to adapt and play along the sideline. That is always a good trait, because that's one of the hardest places to win as a wide receiver, because the corner gets to use the sideline as his, you know, sort of savior. So having more guys, if you're saying Tillman and Jeudy like to live in the slot, having another answer outside would be nice for a player comfortable who can make some just consistent plays in that direction. Because again, I think we all agree David Bell at this point is not a guy who's living on the outside either. So that is a welcome addition, but you got to see it come to fruition. It's got to pan out. And that's never a certainty, especially where they selected and chose to go the route at wide receiver. So, okay, next pick we have is a 207, and it's a bit of a surprise. I mean, sorry, excuse me, 206. Surprise in terms of the name being announced, Nathaniel Watson. He goes by Bookie, which is that's a pretty slick nickname. I like it. And it's a name, this is the first one or one of the few, Andrew, that I was like, who didn't really study that or hear that name? But the profile is pretty good. I mean, like when you look at some of the stuff around his production, it's easy to see what people really liked about the young man. Now, like you said about Thrash, he's older. This is the oldest prospect Andrew Berry has selected at over 23 and a half at draft and will be on September 1st, 24 as the season arrives. I don't give a shit, quite frankly. Some people do. I don't care, especially when the number starts with the 2 in the draft. And you can convince me all the way down to a specific triple digit number that I don't really care about that stuff. But the rigidity of understanding what Andrew Berry prefers, it is noteworthy to say that, right? But a productive football player. And again, this is one of the first ones that I can say like, oh, pandemic played a part here. He arrives in Starkville in 2018, redshirts that first year, then is obviously granted through the 2020 season and an additional season. So he's there 3 years before really doing anything that matters. In 21, he has a starting opportunity. He only missed one game, but he has 84 tackles, 6 tackles for loss, and 5 sacks. Then in 22 and 23, he kind of figures it out. And he should. He's older, you know, more mature. He figures it out, starts 25 games over that time. 113 tackles in 2022, where he has 12 for loss, 6 sacks, a forced fumble, a couple passes defended, and an interception. He gets a second-team All-SEC award, including, I mean, obviously putting up a pretty strong TFL number there, led the team in TFLs. And then in 2023, a real takeoff here for him. 137 tackles, 13 for loss, 10 sacks, Andrew, 2 forced fumbles, 3 passes defended, an interception, a second-team All-American nod, first-team All-SEC, including leading the SEC in sacks and tackles, which is no joke, and he led the team in forced fumbles. So the profile from producing at the level is good. Now, again, older guys, this nature, 6 years at a university, he should produce. There's no doubt. But what I think you're looking at is when you look at early stuff I've seen here, that Mississippi State plays a very funky defense, an odd front with a lot of different moving parts. He is an adaptable piece. He played Mike at that level, which tells me that there's, this is my idea, and I want you to see what you think, and then we'll come back to the scouting reports. He can do that. The mental side of it, he can handle. There's some stories about him learning a position in the Mississippi State linebacker room in the parking lot the day before a game because somebody couldn't actually go in the game when they expected them to. So it seems like from the cerebral part of the position, he understands it. His body is quite capable, long arms, super good, like just in terms of like, what does this guy look like in a football uniform? He fits the part. The RAS score isn't overwhelmingly good. Poor marks and explosion and the agility, not great, but I would say sort of average. He did run a pretty good 40 at 4.63, but the long arms, again, the bench number's low, 16 bench reps, because his arms are, I mean, they're ridiculous for his size. So again, a lot to like here, and a path to me, Andrew, again, you're talking about a guy in the 200s, probably like a third linebacker. He's competing for the Sam role, ability to step up and play a fifth man on the line of scrimmage, be able to rush when they need him to rush, maybe in that spot specifically. And then he gets the talkie-talkie treatment, which is that's how he starts. And then he can develop maybe year two or three, if he's making the roster, a chance to be like a guy that finds the field as a rotational Mike. Or if things go like perfectly by the end of the rookie contract, he's proving capable of handling that role and kind of playing alongside JOK and stepping off the field when it's one linebacker for JOK, that kind of thing. That's a big outcome. But you can see some of that based on the early sort of prognosis here. And I'm curious. Again, you've looked into it. I know we didn't find this guy really well pre-draft, but I'm curious your thoughts around that selection.
This, to me, feels much more like what I consider like a prototypical Andrew Berry selection, right? It feels really reminiscent to other players that they've selected in the later rounds that have had niche productive roles for the Browns, because there's the athletic component that matches up with the production. And I think this is exactly the type of player that you and I, Jake, have talked about wanting to see the Browns being willing to draft in the later rounds. Ignore the age piece of it, because you're getting a player who's ready to come in and contribute now. I think the other part that is just as important as what he does on defense is what he's going to do on special teams. He played all the specials, from what I understand, for Mississippi State. That matters, right? When you're talking about the new kickoff return rule, these guys are going to need to contribute. And so I think that's a big part of it. Again, marrying the height, weight, speed piece with the production has been, I think, the secret to a lot of the Browns' best picks under Andrew Berry. And when they get away from that in one direction or the other, whether it's sacrificing production or sacrificing the athletic testing, then that's where it feels like there tends to be, like they make exceptions for themselves. So when I think about, you know, what I like the Browns to do in the draft, I'm less worried about the age stuff, honestly, especially in the later rounds, and much more excited when I see the marriage of those two factors. So I'm excited about it. I think also there's a culture piece. We didn't really talk about this probably enough last night with Zach Zinter. And to a certain extent, Michael Hall, right? Both playing at big Ten programs, that matters. SEC guy here that has played at the highest level for a long time. You know, it's Mississippi State, it's not Alabama, but still, that level of competition, that matters as well. And I think, you know, like you said, the high IQ part of it, leadership part of it, that all seems in line. And so, yeah, this is a pick that I'm pretty excited about. I see the vision that you're sharing in terms of, you know, starting out in that talkie-talkie specialist kind of role, going in there and trying to knock some blockers off course, and then developing into a more well-rounded player over time, because I think he has the athletic ability to be a little bit of a wrecking ball in this Jim Schwartz scheme where the linebackers get to kind of fly around the same way that JOK has.
Well said, Andrew. Well said. I think something I found interesting from looking at Dane's guide, his football pedigree is wild. His uncle, Harold Morrow, played fullback at Auburn, 92 to 95, 10-year NFL career from 96 to 05, primarily with the Vikings, despite going undrafted in 96. His great uncle, Tommy Agee, played running back at Auburn, 82 to 86, fifth round pick in the 87 draft, playing 8 seasons in the NFL, won 2 Super Bowls with those 90s Cowboys. And then just the person, this is the stuff you like to hear too. Twice earned SEC academic honor roll, graduated with a degree in interdisciplinary studies in 21, earned a master's degree, singular, not multiple, my bad. Don't want to oversell you there, Bookie. So that was in workforce education. And then he was, again, this is noteworthy for off season, but just like the bowl season and getting around significantly great athletes in the setting at the Senior Bowl, he was voted the top linebacker for the American team. He had some really nice reps in that as well. So you're talking about an early special teams contributor, a perhaps chance at a minor linebacker role. He'll compete with Mahmoud Diabate. He'll compete with Tony Fields. He'll compete with the guys on the roster for those roles. But again, a guy who just has been around a lot of football, man. And Dane says about him, he has average agility and erratic instincts that lead to some inconsistencies, but he has size, quick reaction speed, and tackling skills, and he tackles well. He doesn't miss very many tackles.
That sounds like Sione Takitaki to me.
It sure does, man. So if he said he fills up the stat sheet with some of those better traits that he has. He'll need to shine on special teams to lock up a backup role initially for an NFL defense. I think that there's a belief that he can do that, right? So the bottom line from Pro Football Focus is Watson is a classic between the tackles kind of linebacker. And he is. He'll thump you. He'll come downhill like in him. Mac Wilson had flaws, but that's something that he would do very willingly. And it's a similar thing that I see here from Watson. He said, continuing on, he's the kind of linebacker who wins with strength and length, but his athletic limitations will likely limit him to early down work and special teams duties. But that's okay. And I don't think the Browns are going to be putting him in a lot of sideline to sideline initial situations, right? So this is a situation for me where it's a guy who can benefit from learning from Jordan Hicks, right? Like the ability to soak it all in, learn from two pretty good linebackers in front of him, and have a chance to use what is already a pretty good part of his profile to help the team in specials and maybe playing that Sam linebacker role, because he has some you know, his traits are, I think, perhaps even better coming in. I think it's fair to say they are better coming in than guys they brought in last year. And I like Diabate, right? And I like Charlie Thomas, those other guys, and Tony Fields trying to get a chance. But I think it's pretty real that he could have a spot on the roster and thus a chance to impact the roster in some way. So, yeah.
Yeah. I think that through the training camp will be one of the more interesting competitions at the back end of the linebacker room. You've got JOK, Jordan Hicks, but then I think starting with Devin Bush, who they signed all the way through, if there's UDFAs that end up showing up, I think it's really anybody's game for those last few spots.
Yep, we'll hit on those definitely in depth. We'll build those up. We'll talk about UDFAs they get, because linebacker is always a spot for UDFA. So we will break all that down in the coming weeks, and I couldn't agree more kind of looking at it preliminarily. We're going to take a break. We have 2 more picks to talk about. Come back from break and break those down and send you on your merry way on this Sunday. So hang with us. We'll break those 2 picks down right after this short word from our sponsors. The OBR is proudly sponsored by Game Time Ticket App. When you're buying those tickets and it's the last minute, you don't have to be stressed out. You can go to gametime.co or use the Game Time app to make those last minute ticket decisions in the best possible way, with a fast and easy way to buy tickets for sports, music, comedy, and theater near you. The app does a fantastic job of finding opportunities near you for events, both, like I said, sports and otherwise. We have a comedy show that we found recently with the best price that we could possibly find using Game Time. Great seats. You can scout out the seats, have a great experience, and get the image of those seats all within the app, or online, whatever you would like to do. So Game Time is the fast and easy place for those last minute ticket deals. So take advantage, snag your tickets with Game Time, and avoid the stress. Download the Game Time app, create an account, use the promo code OBR for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create that account, use the promo code OBR, get $20 off your first purchase. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a lowly podcaster like me, the world is starting to understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. The NFL has been placing a larger emphasis in this area, especially that mental well-being. The Browns are leading the charge in this as well, trying to get their players to the right physical and mental peak every day, and that's what Unified Healing System is trying to do, and they're a proud sponsor of the OBR Film Breakdown. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement Systems, or EE Systems. If you haven't heard of EE Systems yet, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Whether you're in Cleveland or Columbus like me, or hundreds of other locations across the globe, access is easy and affordable. If you're interested in experiencing the EE system for yourself, go to unifiedhealing.com/OBR. Again, that's unified with a YD, unifiedhealing.com/OBR, to learn more and find a center near you. A reminder, no material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
You don't need this every selection, Andrew, but you like when people call your team smart, think you got one of those diamonds in the rough. Those players may be under-discussed, but they think have a role in the NFL. And I think that there are a significant amount of people who think the Browns found that in a defensive back they took at pick 227, grabbing from South Dakota Miles Harden, right? An FCS player, so you're not getting a ton of buildup, but a guy who played inside of a pretty effective NFL-based scheme and played in the Shrine Bowl, right? The East-West Shrine Bowl, and had a real impact on the people there. Eric Galco suffers, you know, certainly studies this stuff as the director of football ops for that bowl, said of Harden, the Browns grabbed a favorite sleeper of many scouts in Miles Harden. He had a lot of scouts directors traveling to South Dakota this year to watch the Coyotes play, especially after his matchup versus Luther Burden, who was going to be a top wide receiver for Missouri in the next class. He adds versatile profile at either corner, but more likely nickel in a strong Cleveland DB room. So your ears perk up a little bit when you hear that, right? That they did what they seem to do so often and take a guy, a defensive back that people like. They have a knack for finding these guys that people like.
You find that here with you. You look around at the opinions of Miles Harden, a guy who marries a nice above 8 relative athletic score, 5'10", 195, strong enough, good vertical, 36 inches. The only part that was on the poor side was a 9-foot broad jump, but a 4.5 40, a 1.52 10-yard split, and a really good agility grade, including a really good 3.98 shuttle that is indicative of a guy who can handle the two-way go responsibility that comes with playing nickel. And so my ears perk up. Obviously, it's hard to come across these guys, you know, tape for South Dakota, stuff like that, right? But I'm definitely drawn to the idea of somebody like this in the secondary, a focused player in the secondary. I look at Pro Football Focus's look at him, Andrew, and they give his technique and spacing IQ their highest grade, the most important part of his profile, and the second most important part of his profile that he's best at, run support and tackling. Something I think that the Browns have been lacking inside the slot for a while now. So I want your initial opinion of this, and then we'll do a little bit more of the scouting notes. But I think you're like, okay, they did it again here. Cam Mitchell, some of these guys they're taking 3 to 6 and even into the 7th round here are guys that the NFL seems to see a real fit for them at this level.
I mean, while you were kind of introducing the player, I'm watching YouTube highlights, and my blurb reaction is discount Mikey Sainristil still. Like, it's a player that we talked about all the way back to September. One of our favorite players in the draft ends up going to Washington, I think 50th overall. Never really thought the Browns were probably going to be in on him just because of how their needs stacked up and the fact that they've got 3 cornerbacks right now. And I'm watching the tape here of this guy, or the highlights. I shouldn't say the tape, the highlights. And he's got that same mean streak that is so noticeable and so much fun when it comes out of a smaller player on the defense, right? Where he just wants to come up and hit a guy. And so, yeah, my first reaction is, oh, this is cool. This is fun. So 7th round pick, you know, it's a long road to even probably for him even make the roster, in all honesty, with the, you mentioned all the names already, 4 good cornerbacks, and then they've got 2 good special teams players who are nominally cornerbacks in Tony Brown and Justin Hardy, who are also kind of in that position. So he's probably going to struggle to make the roster, in all honesty, but man, this is the type of guy that I like playing nickel in a defense, a guy that wants to come up and hit running backs, wide receivers, blow up a bubble screen, come up and hit you in the mouth. This is that type of guy.
Pro Football Focus says Harden doesn't have much experience in the slot, but a nickel role would emphasize his strengths, quickness, run support, and competitiveness. And he has a ton of competitiveness, like you mentioned, Andrew, and mitigate the concerns that he has at the next level, which are long speed and length. He could be a starting nickel at some point. That is a sentiment that keeps coming out. And Dane took it further. He has a 5th round grade on him and says, overall, Harden doesn't offer ideal length or long speed, but he plays quick, confident, and is a rough neck competitor in both coverage and run support. With NFL, this is a long summary. With NFL quality fluidity and ball skills, he can handle coverage duties from multiple techniques, inside or outside, and has the traits to earn. This is a big line. Like, he doesn't throw this around often. The traits to earn a starting nickel job as a rookie. That's huge. I mean, that is a significant line for a guy that you're getting at pick 227 here. So, like, it's an impressive run. And you look at, I understand South Dakota, but they played up. I mean, he faced Christian Watson, right? He faced Luther Burden. He faced real NFL talent, not consistently. And the thing that you need him to do, if he's not going to consistently face NFL talent, is dominate. And it seems like he dominated. You look at the run through here. He was a no-star recruit coming out of high school. And he came out of high school, Miami Gardens down there at Miramar, which is like, from what I understand, is Geno Smith's area, his high school. So it's not like he was playing nowhere, like hidden. Like, he just didn't.
He's not from South Dakota.
Yeah, he
just wanted to play.
Didn't get respect coming out. And he was in the 2020 class. He received attention from FCF schools as a recruit and drew the eyes. And this is, again, straight up from Dane's unbelievable background study here, which is a lot of this stuff. He drew the eyes of former Iowa linebacker Abdul Hodge, a name I remember very well. I'm sure you do too, Andrew, in the heart of Big Ten country. who started his coaching career with South Dakota. Harden commits to the Coyotes as one of their top billed guys in their 2020 class. Immediate impact, Andrew. It's only 4 games because it's the pandemic season in 2020. 4 games, 16 tackles, 4 games, 9 passes defended, 2 interceptions. He gets a freshman All-American nod, honorable mention all MVFC conference award, leading the team in interceptions, passes defended, shortened season. So he plays the next 2 years with, this is something that is important to note, short seasons because of injuries. 2021, he has 25 tackles, 3.5 TFLs, has a forced fumble and 1 pass defend. He missed the final 6 games with a leg injury, okay? In 22, he has a great start through 6 games, a great start. 44 tackles, 4 TFLs, a sack. Again, wild numbers in just 6 games. 4 forced fumbles, 9 passes defended again, and 3 interceptions. Earned second team all-conference, leading the team in forced fumbles, interceptions, passes defended, in 6 games. Misses the final 5, though, because of a foot. So he got a leg and a foot injury. 23, had opportunities to go up and play at the FBS level. Teams were asking. He stays loyal to the program at South Dakota, plays 13 games, 58 tackles, 4 TFLs, 7 passes defended, an interception. Second team All-American honors, first team All-Conference, team captain. The place there raves about him. They rave about him. And again, he was in the East-West Shrine Bowl, people raving about him. I love it. I mean, I love the selection. And you mentioned Sainer still. Like, wouldn't that be just in a sort of a poetic situation because of the profound love that you and I had for what Sainer still could bring? And if he can be, and I just keep going back to, like, some of these people don't throw these things around lightly. And Dane saying that he could start in the NFL as a rookie nickel because of the competitiveness, because of the run support he can provide, and the shuttle score there tells you a story about his ability to handle that inside out stuff. They have a player here. I think it is, as you well mentioned really well there, it's not the most easy path to making the roster. Probably have to beat out like Khalif Halassi, which is, again, I think he's a fun football player the Browns claimed from the Chiefs last year. But I kind of am getting a little bit of an expectation, Andrew, that this guy's a part of the team this year.
Yeah, from just kind of the high level, Watson and Harden are for sure the sort of exciting names from day two. And honestly, I think, given what I've said about the guard, it's not that I'm down on Zach Zinter's ability to play. It's just that there's not a spot for him. So I think Mike Hall is going to contribute this year, and I think Watson and Harden have a chance to contribute. I like I said before, the jury is out on Thrash, and we'll talk about their last pick at 243. But I am very excited about this pick. This is going to be a player that is going to be a hoot to watch in preseason. I guarantee you.
Yeah, just as far as going away from the draft, moving away, just settling into people really liking that player. That seems to be the one that most people are like, the Browns found a great value in that guy outside of Mike Hall, right? So that's the one that, you feel best about. The last pick is one that I think caught us by surprise. Perhaps it shouldn't have caught us by surprise because the Browns are looking to give themselves more solutions at the one tech or shade. They go with Juwan Briggs out of Cincinnati. And again, like I said, you're talking about pick, 243 here, I think, Andrew. So just maybe latching onto a trait. This guy is a really strong fella. 39 bench press reps. One of the better scores you'll see from defensive tackles, period. Shorter, 6'1.5", 313. But the 39 bench press reps is pretty crazy. I'm not really worried about the vertical of a guy, 313, so much. The broad jump's fine. A pretty good 40-yard dash, and just respectable enough in the rest of that with the composite agility. I think, again, Siaki Ika better show up ready to go. I'm not saying that Briggs is going to get that role, but I'm just saying as far as like having some traits and saying the Browns saying we need something respectable from the shade and the backup behind Dalvin Tomlinson, there's a little bit of pressure there, Andrew, and I think that this is a soft indication that they need to provide more answers there.
I think you're absolutely right. And I think it's also really good context of the Browns having, like, we go back to 2022. You think about what their depth chart looked like at defensive tackle of the 22 season and how and what sort of malpractice that was. It wasn't just a one-year over-adjustment last year to make sure they fixed that problem because they have continued to invest in this position. So I think it's beyond Ika, they are just going to drive competition in that room and give Jim Schwartz as many dudes as he can handle. And, like, worth remembering, the Browns changed defensive line coaches again this offseason. They went from Ben Bloom to Jacques Césaire, who played in the NFL, I think is pretty well thought of. There are some guys now between Mike Hall, this player, some of the guys from last year that are coming back. You mentioned Ika. There are a lot of young players around this roster that they can work with. And I think that the emphasis for them is going to be getting the most out of some of them, right? They don't all have to hit, but you need to find a few of these young guys that can stick around for a few years. Right. And even if they're not starters, they can provide quality depth and quality reps in a rotation.
I mean, Briggs comes from a strong pedigree. He was a 4-star recruit, the number 2 player in the Ohio class when he came out.
Definitely a player worth taking a late flyer as a sort of priority free agent.
Right. He went to Walnut Hills down in Cincinnati, top 100 overall guy, offers from like Ohio State, Alabama, big programs, selects Virginia, goes to Virginia and immediately plays, starts 7 games as a freshman. And even though he produced a little bit, but he's a pretty well-rounded guy. Like, the story here is a very well-rounded person. He's a singer. Like, he is a very interesting fellow. He had 19 tackles, 3 tackles for loss, and a sack as a true freshman. So the pandemic shortened season happens. He started all 7 of those games, 20 tackles, 4 for loss, 3 sacks. Decides to transfer back home to Cincinnati, kind of getting his feet wet in the program again. Has, again, a wildly consistent 42 tackles, 4 tackles for loss, 3 sacks. And then in 22, he starts all 13 games. 60 tackles. Guess what? 4.5 tackles for loss, 3 sacks. First team all AAC. Graduated with his degree in that season. He sticks around for 1 more year at Cincinnati. They convert over to the Big 12. Starts all 12 games. The tackle numbers go down to 27. But he has 6 tackles for loss, 2 sacks. He's an honorable mention all Big 12 player, team captain. He goes to the Shrine Bowl. Pretty much everybody the Browns are pursuing is hitting one of these bowl games, right? He kind of moved off of that nose tackle role, which I think the Browns were drawn to in some of his better performance. Dane noted he moved it into more of like a 4-4 eye, so like inside eye of the tackle. So that speaks a little bit to the decrease in production from a tackle's perspective for him. But he was on Feldman's freak list, which to be on that list, you genuinely have to have some ridiculous quality. And being able to bench press 39 reps is going to put you on that list. This is a strong SOB at the line of scrimmage, and is a very, from what I have read, a very mature person too, having graduated college. Him and his wife have, Andrew, 3 kids already. So he's like a family man. Like, he is hitting the ground as a grown man when he comes to Cleveland. Dane said of him, he lacks ideal length, and that's true. The arms are a little shorter, right? He's a little, generally a little shorter than you would like from some of your bigger guys who are lining up over the inside eye of the guard or shaded over the center. But his rush talent is a work in progress, but he's a mix of one gap quickness, sounds like something the Browns like, and he has the power that could earn him a depth spot. And I think that that's probably how they view it. Maybe a guy who's sort of not the ceiling is making the roster as a depth player, but the most common path for him outcome here wise is probably a practice squad role with a chance to, you know, come up and be active according to injuries and stuff like that as the NFL gets more flexible with some of these roles and adds more games and all that stuff over time, as they seem to want to do. They're going to allow for more flexibility. I have no problem with this. I really think it can be a player that suits up for the Cleveland. And that's what you want. I mean, pick 243 here. You want a guy who's going to maybe suit up for the Browns.
And fills a specific role, right? I think that's part of it too, is that you see specifically the fit as a depth plugger that can just kind of outmuscle guys. It makes sense. And I think, I don't think that it's wrong to say that this pick, not obviously Mike Hall directly, because he's not competing for the same type of snaps as Siaki Ika, but the room is full is the point. It's arguably over full. I mean, we went into this draft wondering if they would draft a defensive tackle, and they drafted two. So the fire is on, right? The heat is on. The seats are all warm, and whether it's Hurst or whomever else, Ika, across the board, these guys have some pressure to produce. It's not out of the realm of possibility that they turn around and trade a player. I don't think that they would trade Dalvin Tomlinson from a contract perspective, but is there a team that would come calling in the preseason if there was an injury and the Browns would listen on Shelby Harris, for example? Like, I just think the room is full, and that's a good thing because they need to be driving competition in that room to get the best out of those players.
Well said. And I, again, it's not the end all be all, but the pedigree of this young man, like, mention the offers. I mean, you're talking Iowa, Iowa State, Kentucky, Michigan, Michigan State, Notre Dame, Ohio State, Penn State, Purdue, Tennessee, Wisconsin. Like, they were, everybody was after him. So he comes from a strong, you know, athletic upbringing. He was a grown man strength recruit that translates into a really strong adult. And I just will be fascinated to see how guys like Whipler and some of these centers, the young centers the Browns have, and the guards are able to handle him and some of the stuff that he can do with a heavy-handed, strong interior presence there. So yeah, he's got a chance, and that's a wrap. We have already seen some guys come across on the UDFA side. Like I said, early this week, we will break some of those guys down as we see them and kind of give you the comprehensive list. And then at some point I will also get to doing those local beat writer interviews for people that covered these guys, which is, I think, one of my favorite things to do. So a lot of good stuff coming ahead. Andrew, anything you want to close with?
I just, big picture thoughts on the draft.
We need to grade it before we go too.
Yeah. If you had offered me odds on the Browns sticking and picking at every one of their spots and drafting four defensive players and two offensive players, I would have needed really long odds on those things happening to take those bets. I would have bet against both of those outcomes. I would have said that they drafted more offensive players than defensive players. And I would have said that they definitely moved around a little bit. So I can't believe that they made all of their picks in those spots. I can't believe that they added three players in the sixth and seventh round. I like the players that they added, so it's hard to get too bent out of shape about it. But it is really interesting the way that they approach this. And I know Andrew Berry said in the post-draft press conference that they had opportunities to trade. They were working on it, and I believe that. But I just am so surprised that the Eagles made like a dozen trades or something. The Browns couldn't find a way to make one. So I'm surprised.
Sometimes I feel like, I swear to God, the idea is we're going to not do what everybody's thinking we're going to do. We're not going to let them know that they have us figured out. It's not that, but it's like, it feels like that at times where they're throwing curveballs.
Absolutely. Where it feels almost like, you think it's going to be like this, huh?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. You're right about that. So we got a lot to do, man. I'm going to slap a grade on this. I will say, probably a B- if Thrash becomes a real, contributor. You're probably looking at like a B+, A-, because that's an important swing spot at 156. So yeah, I think a B- feels right for me. Where are you at?
I think I'm probably at a C+. I'm more excited about the day two picks or day three picks than I am the day two picks, in all honesty. I like Michael Hall. I think he's going to be a fine player for the Browns, and I think he has an upside potential to be a really good starter in the NFL. I think Zach Zinter too. I guess maybe guilty of being a little hung up on why they needed to go guard in round three. And the need, it's not that they, I know that they don't ever draft for need. I did not see that draft playing out defensive tackle guard in rounds two and three. I thought that there was an opportunity to find some difference makers on offense in this draft at skill positions. And the fact that they didn't come away with a day two skill position player on offense bothers me, to be perfectly honest. So that definitely weighs against it for me. You're right. If Thrash pans out, then that evens it out. And there's a chance that they get really enough contributions from the other guys fairly quickly that evens it out. And like I said, if Zach Zinter goes on to be a three contract guy for the Browns and a 10-year starter, then I will absolutely take that and be happily wrong. I just, my first blush is they went in directions that I wasn't expecting them to, and almost in some ways away from the strength of the draft that just kind of caught me off guard. Plus, I do think, like, as I said, the Eagles making, I know it wasn't actually a dozen, but it was 9 or 10 trades, tells me that for, in a lot of cases, these trades are out there to be made. And there's a little bit, Jake, the other thing, I agree with you about the zig when everybody else thinks we're going to zag. It also reminds me a little bit of a lot of the Cleveland baseball team trade deadlines down the years,
yeah,
where they're one or two guys away and they get to, they do a press conference the day after or whatever. And Chris Antonetti says, just never found the fit that we were looking for. And there's a certain mindset within sort of data-driven front offices that prefers the outcome that they have already, the known rather than the unknown. And I worry sometimes a little bit, and this is tied to what we were talking about last night, that it makes them a little conservative.
I can't put up much of a protest to it. I think I'm a little less concerned than you, but I am understanding of your point of view on it. And it's something, as we like have given them credit before, this is the first time they've given us a draft evidence quite like this. They've always been very willing to move. It is, borderline jarring that they didn't do that one time. So I see exactly where you're coming from. I will say, before we split here, Steve Smith's top 20 receivers, he has Jamari Thrash 13th. So this is based on films, not who he likes or dislikes. Yeah.
Did you see who he has 14th?
I did. Keon Coleman. He has Jermaine Burton 17th. He has Jalen Polk 18th. Yeah. Roman Wilson 20th.
Yeah.
And then he has Malik Nabers in front of Marvin Harrison. So, yeah. I mean, again, these.
Shout out to Brad Ward for tweeting that out. Thank you, Brad.
I will say this, just as we are against definitive statements before the draft, we never really know how these things are going to turn out once these guys hit the league. So, I do have a feeling this could be a Chris Sims like list that we look at though in a few years and we're like, all right.
Yeah, the Nabers over Harrison thing is a swing for sure.
There are
things I think to talk about and questions to ask. I think it should be clear at this point. I've been doing this show long enough that people should feel really good that, like, I had questions about Kevin Stefanski last offseason. He answered a lot of them, and I'm very happy that he's getting a contract extension hopefully soon, right? Like, you can ask these questions and then be wrong or have the questions answered to your satisfaction, and that's great news, right? Like, Jamari Thrash can come in and have 40 catches and outperform David Bell and become a very reliable piece of their offense, and I'd be thrilled. I would be genuinely thrilled that they found a guy that can contribute in the fifth round as a wide receiver. If Donovan Peoples-Jones can do it, right?
If DPJ can do it, they can find a way. It's just about, again, though, it's such a crowded room, So him finding the path will be quite fascinating. Like I said, so much to come, so many good things in the next few weeks, breaking down the entirety of this thing, looking around the rest of the league. We'll be here to cover all of it. Quick reminder on our way out, rate and review the podcast if you can. Greatly appreciate that, guys. And thanks for taking the time out of your day to listen to this pod over the weekend. And I hope you've enjoyed the draft coverage, both through the live stuff we did at the OBR, the write-ups we have done, and then the podcast coverage as well. So again, thanks to Andrew for hanging out late and doing these, and Ian on the first night for doing that one as well, and you guys for hanging out with us. Appreciate it much. Be well, guys. Have a great Sunday or Monday whenever this finds you, and go Browns.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.